a Wednesday. It's June the 5th. Hi, I'm George Prentice for Gemma Gaudette, and this is Idaho Matters on Boise State Public Radio News. Kevin Martin is here. He is the national president of Peace Action and the Peace Action Education Fund. You may have seen his writing in the New York Times or the Washington Post. You've heard him on NPR or seen him on a number of television news programs. He has been a part of delegations to Russia, Japan, China, and Mexico. The mission statement of Peace Action states, quoting here, "We believe that war is not a suitable response to conflict." Kevin Martin is a guest this week of the Idaho Peace Coalition. He spoke last evening in Boise on the topic of promoting a peaceful foreign policy, and he's here to spend a few minutes with us. Kevin Martin, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Let's make some news here. It's my understanding that your organization has a petition that is targeted to hopefuls for the White House. What is this?
Well, one of the things is we think that we have an opportunity here because of a lot of things that are happening internationally, but also with the current president, to challenge folks that want to be in the White House to declare that the United States should not ever be the first to use nuclear weapons. It's called a no first use policy. It's hard to believe this, but the U.S. president or the head of the other eight states with nuclear weapons, it's one person who can decide to start a nuclear war that could end life on Earth. There are some efforts in Congress to try to change that. We're supporting efforts that say no president, whether it was Trump or anybody, could start a nuclear war without Congress's approval. But as it stands now, they could. There's a great book by a Harvard professor named Elaine Scarry called Thermonuclear Monarchy. And that's the reality. As far as nuclear war is concerned, there's no democracy. Any head of state with nuclear weapons could make the single decision, one person, basically to end life on Earth. We think that's completely unacceptable. So we're challenging all of the candidates for president at this point to say that they would sign a no first use pledge that the United States would never initiate a nuclear war.
Well, there's plenty of them, a couple of dozen by my last count.
In the United States?
Yeah.
That's a funny thing because there was a survey 2 years ago that asked Americans how many nuclear warheads do we have?
No. I'm talking candidates, not nuclear warheads.
Well, them too.
Let's not go there. I'm talking about 24 candidates.
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
At least.
How many nuclear warheads? Like, I wasn't guessing 24 nuclear warheads.
No, about 9,000.
Yeah,
survey of the American public, people thought 300 or 400. So we're that ignorant about these warheads that our tax dollars pay for. 300 or 400, that's France. We have about 9,000.
Okay. Back to the candidates. Do you have a sense where any of them weigh in on this?
Not yet. I mean, there are a few that are particularly good on challenging endless war and Pentagon spending. So Bernie Sanders, for example, and we did endorse him in 2016, which is rare. We don't usually endorse for president. We don't know about 2020 yet. He's been very good on a lot of war and peace issues, and he has said, if I'm president, the Pentagon's not getting $700 billion a year in terms of military spending. He hasn't taken a position yet on this issue of no first use of nuclear weapons. There are some others that are also very good on peace issues, and I think for us and for a lot of groups now, it's a lot about ranking and comparing the candidates. We do bird dogging to challenge them in public settings and ask them questions, and this will be one, and we'll see what kind of response we get to this petition campaign, asking for this no first use declaration.
I think I know what you mean by bird dogging.
Yes.
Give us an example.
We train volunteers to go to candidate events and ask them tough questions. And we've had a lot of success getting.
But you can be creative with getting their attention.
Oh, you certainly can. You have to be, actually.
So give me an example of that.
Well, we've had great success with getting Hillary Clinton on national television to talk about her policies on nuclear weapons. It was one of our bird doggers that got John McCain to admit that he would be okay with U.S. forces staying in Iraq for 100 years. I mean, you can really sometimes throw them off script if you're able to get them in a public setting and get them to talk about real issues which they often would rather avoid.
The political climate. We've never been more divided. To that end, my sense is people are anxious to paint you into a far left corner.
I'm glad you're bringing that up because this is about human survival. I don't particularly care what your politics are on 8 million other issues. If you don't agree that we should not have a nuclear war, there's not a lot to talk about. Now, I do care about a lot of issues, and certainly Peace Action has what would be called a progressive agenda. But it's like climate change. Climate change is about human survival or not. Are you for survival or aren't you? Same thing with nuclear war. Either we're for remaining as a civilization or we're not. It should not be a partisan issue at all.
We're talking with Kevin Martin. He's the national president of Peace Action. We'd love to hear from you on this topic. You can send an email to idahomatters@boisestate.edu. On Twitter, use the hashtag IdahoMatters and join the conversation on our Facebook page. Can we talk a bit about this region and the nuclear issue and how it really does hit pretty close to home?
Very much so. And I was just in Montana, but also we have contacts and chapters and affiliates with other folks in the region. I'm stupid enough to live in Washington, D.C., so I am a target. If there were a nuclear war breaking out, me and my family, my house would be vaporized. That's my fault. I'm dumb enough to live in Washington. But folks that live out here, Montana, for example, there's no reason in the world anybody would ever want to nuke Montana except there are 500 warheads on intercontinental ballistic missiles there. I don't know about Idaho National Laboratory here, but I guess it probably is a target of the Russians. Certainly STRATCOM in Omaha, the other nuclear weapons that are in the ICBMs, and they're also the most dangerous and destabilizing. So there actually was a campaign, or at least a consideration, under the Obama administration to get rid of the ICBMs. I think people in this region could say, we don't want to be targets. Get the targets off of our back. Get rid of these nuclear warheads. Get rid of these nuclear facilities, because we don't think we should be targets of Russia or of anybody else.
Can we talk a little bit about North Korea?
Sure. I work on that a lot.
Yeah, I bet. Where do you weigh in on President Trump's provocative doctrine on North Korea and his interesting relationship with Kim Jong-un?
He's right to negotiate with North Korea, but he's just doing it very badly. And, of course, the president that matters most is President Moon of South Korea. It was a people's movement that installed him as president, and he was very clear that he was running on a platform for peace and reconciliation. So President Trump is to be commended for trying to negotiate, but he's done it so badly. And the last summit in Hanoi was torpedoed by people in his own administration, including John Bolton, who threw in last-minute demands that they knew would scuttle the negotiations if there's no way that North Korea would accept it. And to go back for a second to the partisan issue you raised, it's very frustrating in Washington. There are a lot of Democrats who normally would be in favor of diplomacy. They supported the Iran anti-nuclear deal under the previous administration, for example. But they don't support negotiations with North Korea because they don't want Trump to get a political victory.
Well, there's that, but then there's also the fact that Kim Jong-un has no hesitation of ordering someone to be killed.
He's horrible. There's no question about that. But what we're talking about is what 80 million Koreans want, and they want peace and reconciliation. And that's what should be driving us, not U.S. Posture in the region. It's still a very much of a neo-imperial posture. We really sort of control the relationship with the South Korean military. A lot of South Koreans don't like that. They want peace. And at a certain point, if we're a good ally, we have to let them have peace and support that.
Just a few weeks ago, the U.S. Senate failed to override President Trump's veto of a War Powers Act resolution. And that resolution would have directed the president to remove U.S. armed forces from participating in the Saudi-led war in Yemen within 30 days. Can you weigh in on that? It appeared as if the Senate wanted movement on this. They just didn't have enough votes to override.
Exactly. And it's horrible. It's one of the worst humanitarian catastrophes, if not the worst, on Earth right now. And the U.S. is directly involved. And the only interests it serves are the huge weapons contractors who are making a lot of money and making huge profits from these weapon sales to Saudi Arabia that are turning around and killing children. That school bus bombing last year should have shocked the conscience of the world, and it did. Why the Republicans, and particularly Trump, are so committed to continuing this relationship with one of the worst, most authoritarian human rights abusing countries in the world in Saudi Arabia and their slaughter of Yemen is beyond me. We were able to win twice on this vote, both in the House and the Senate, because of parliamentary tomfoolery. We had to do it twice, but then we weren't able to override Trump's veto. We're not going to give up because, again, this is the worst humanitarian catastrophe going on right now, and the people of Yemen can't wait.
Can I assume that your organization and folks in your organization have partnerships usually with faith-based organizations?
We do.
But that said, on any given Sunday, chances are I'm sitting in a pew near someone who has no problem with military intervention. and there's a disconnect there.
Sure. That's true even among the people that I work with who are full-time peace activist organizers with faith groups or pastors who are great on our issues, and they will admit that it's extremely hard for them to talk about these issues at all. For me, I'm sort of lucky because the folks that I work with, their faith drives their belief in peace and justice and their activism. But I think there's larger questions about we're just not very aware of our level of militarism in this country. Again, people thought we have 300 or 400 nuclear warheads when we have 9,000. Most people don't know that we have 800 foreign military bases around the world. The last 2 years, just the increase in the Pentagon budget was larger than Russia's entire military budget. And most people just don't know this. We're very unaware of our militarism. It's just the air we breathe in this country at this point.
Can you talk a little bit about last night's event? I'm guessing it's a rather traditional event for you to have something like this in different cities. But can I also assume that there's a lot of people in there who are already singing from your songbook, and your initiative is to get folks that aren't a member of the coalition in the room?
Very much so. And there were some new folks, and particularly some younger folks, who haven't been particularly engaged with peace issues or especially with nuclear disarmament issues. And often they come at the issue because of human rights concerns, economic justice, or environmental concerns. And that's a big connection that people need to make more. War and preparations for war is the biggest polluter of the planet. The U.S. military is the biggest polluter, and we're the largest fossil fuel consumer. And a lot of people don't know that. So the fact that so many people are mobilized around climate chaos is fantastic, but they're not making the connection, unfortunately, to our permanent war system and to militarism, and that's one of the connections we have to strengthen.
What does your day book look like? What's your calendar look like?
Right now, it's a lot of traveling. I was in Montana and here and then to Utah. When I'm back in Washington, there's a lot of conference calls. I mean, I do work in D.C., particularly with some of our allies on Capitol Hill. But a lot of it's conference calls. And I'm also really a grassroots organizer at heart. I was the head of executive director of Illinois Peace Action in Chicago for 10 years. And we have wonderful chapters and affiliates and associate groups all around the country. So that's really what jazzes me is the grassroots work. But we do lobby Congress. We do protest when that's appropriate. And we work on elections. We work very effectively on elections, which a lot of peace groups don't. So we really embrace all the tools in the social change box.
The social change toolbox,
that's what it is.
The first Democratic primary is weeks away, so good luck with that.
It can never get here, can it? It doesn't seem like it.
Kevin Martin is the National President of Peace Action. Thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
This is Idaho Matters on a Wednesday, June 5th, and you're listening to Boise State Public Radio News.